Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 464.
This week on the podcast, after success at the state level, Trump is working to destigmatize federal indictments for ex-presidents.
Plus, a candidate you've never heard of announces a one-point policy plan you don't care about in the 2024 GOP primary.
And lots of evil people are dead, but nope, still not Henry Kissinger.
Plus, Lindsey Graham is very much hoping that you'll let him repeat his irrelevant GOP talking points in peace.
And in the Trump indictment frenzy, stop worrying about the details. Just worry about the story arc.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey, y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Here we are.
Here we are 2.5 weeks later.
That's right.
We're busy. So sorry about it.
It happens.
We're here to bring you news of one of the greater days in American history, the first federal Trump arraignment. Although we, I guess at this point, we've gotten used to seeing him be arraigned in various locales.
Sure.
He's every few months he gets indicted and then we have to go to watch an arraignment. Before we get into that, there were a number of candidate announcements last week.
Yeah.
And as your 2024/every-election-year election source, we wanted to make sure that you were aware of the candidates coming into the race, including Cornel West.
Cornel West? What?
He's back, you guys.
He's back.
He's back. He's running on the People's Party line, and he's, I guess, planning.
No one knows.
No one knows. Planning shitster. He's doing what he does. It's going to be great. The Republican field got much larger last week in an official capacity.
Yeah.
A number of people who had been teasing that they were going to announce. And then one person that we've never heard of, who is a current elected official in the United States, all announced. So Chris Christie.
You said that in a way that makes it sound like maybe other people had heard of him.
But that's also not true.
That's not true.
I can think of maybe 200,000 people that have heard of him. And they all live in a state that I've never been to that I also don't believe exists.
Right.
Of the real candidates, we had Chris Christie announced. We're going to talk about him a lot later in the podcast related to the Trump arraignment. But he has officially announced now. No one, not sure why he thinks this might be his year. But, you know, what a time to be Chris Christie.
I have some surprising thoughts on that. So stay tuned.
Yeah, Chris Christie is going to be the Mike Huckabee of this podcast, just so that you're prepared. And then we also have Mike Pence announced. He doesn't know why. We don't know why. No one knows why. He's a waxen figure who is running for president. He had a town hall.
Probably more on him later, too, potentially.
Yeah, fair enough. he had a town hall earlier in the week when he announced.
Truly embarrassing.
Did not illuminate for anyone why he's planning to run for president.
A lot of bad extemporaneous speaking and heavy breathing. Why is he breathing so heavy? Did you notice this?
He's embarrassed. A lot of like,
this was weird.
Yeah.
He's weird.
We had a real revelation actually that came thanks to Grant Sloss, friend of the podcast, Grant Sloss, who you've heard many times, where he sent us a tweet that finally explains why no one understands how arms are. It's they're all wearing shapewear. Of course they can't breathe.
Shapewear and in some instances, very high lifts in their heels as well, which is putting them off kilter from their, you know,
specifically
normal, their
in
normal
the case
standing.
Of
certainly
Ron
DeSantis
Sanctimonious
is doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Because we've seen photos of him where it looks like he's, you know, levitating off of the ground.
Right.
Based on how high his heels are in whatever lifts he's got in.
And his arms really are functioning much like wings because they're just weirdly held outside of his body beside him.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we finally got to the bottom of that.
Yeah. That had been really, because it felt like a something that was spreading. Like we noticed it initially with Ron DeSantis, and then it seemed like other candidates were like developing this condition.
Right. Mike
and
Pence,
I was like, are they
sure.
losing
we knew about
control
Donald Trump,
of their
obviously,
arms?
The whole Trump family.
Yeah, the whole Trump family has arms issues. But it was when it hit Mike Pence that I was like, things have gotten out of control. Mike Pence doesn't even like Donald Trump. He's not even trying to be like Donald Trump. And he lost control of his arms too, and then it finally made sense. So So we had Mike Pence in an extraordinarily embarrassing debut in a CNN town hall. And then out of the clear blue sky, Doug Burgum, the governor of North Dakota,
Who now?
Announced he was running for president.
Doug who now? Doug
you know
Berg?
Doug Burgum.
Oh,
you
sure.
know that North Dakota.
Yeah, no.
You've heard about the Dakotas, right?
You want to know what's weird is that I do know Kristi Noem.
I know.
Who was
well,
the governor of the other Dakota. So it's you would think that maybe you would just know the governors of the Dakotas, but you don't.
You don't. No, you don't know anything about North Dakota because North Dakota is not making it into the national conversation. It's in Canada.
It's Canada. Yeah.
Right. And think about the level of insanity Kristi Noem had to project in order to get that kind of notoriety. I mean, she did not come in looking to just be a responsible
Doug Burgum.
To be Doug Burgum, who just has folksy aphorisms, and we're likely, I guess, just right. going to hear him and say a bunch of folksy shit. I don't know.
Yep. Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Well, he did. His campaign video had the line, "Woke was something you did at 5 a.m. to start your chores." So we do know. We
Hardy
know
har,
that it's
going
to be embarrassing, and we're going to have to sit through it. Oh, and also, he has only one campaign promise so far.
Yep.
And it's to go to the southern border in the first weeks of office, if elected.
Vacay!
He's promised us to take a vacation in Texas.
Right.
So that's...
The first thing I'll do after I win election is go to Texas. Watch
right.
me.
It's like,
I promise.
Does,
Don't
he
you
could
worry.
Do that. He could do that now.
Well, presumably he would if he plans on staying in this primary long enough. He would have to.
Yeah.
I mean... It doesn't make any sense.
Doug Burgum.
What
Doug a guy.
Burgum.
I couldn't tell you even the first thing about what he looks like, but I do have an image in my mind. And I think that
it's
that
correct.
Image is just Steve Bullock
that's
looking
it.
Like Doug Burgum.
You did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
He's going to be physically interchangeable in the way that there was like that sort of like Joe Sestak genre candidate
oh
in the last
God.
Election.
Yes.
Remember Joe Sestak running for
yes,
president? Barely, but... Yeah. There's the Michael Bennett, the
That's
Joe
it.
Sestak, all those guys. This is the Republican folksy, the Northern Republican
yeah.
version of that guy, Doug Burgum.
That's it. That's exactly right.
We're gonna
I have
find
a question
out he's like
about these
8 feet tall and blonde or something weird.
Yeah, no, he's definitely not. I have a question about these CNN town halls because all the Republicans have been getting them, including Donald Trump, which seems to have maybe tanked the network and gotten the head of CNN fired.
right.
But I, you know, Marianne Williamson and Robert Kennedy Jr. are leading all Republican candidates not named Donald Trump. And I'm curious if they're going to get their town halls. And I know you're probably thinking, well, Brent, they're both crazy. And I don't know that I totally disagree with you as much as I love Marianne Williamson.
I
and we'll probably
couldn't
vote
agree
for
more
her in
with
a Democratic
you.
Primary.
Right.
Now, but I'm just curious what their thinking is, truly, because I think
yeah.
that they're out here being like, well, we're doing democracy, and that's why everybody is
right.
getting a CNN town hall.
Right.
And then additionally, I feel like I have seen some of the recent press hits of RFK Jr. recently, and if I'm Joe Biden, I'm thinking to myself, I know the Democrats, like, get the man on national television where he has to speak extemporaneously, because as it turns out, he can't, and he's already has like a baseline of crazy that is really sort of unmatched, I think, within the,
yeah.
the Democratic Party, probably. So I just don't know why they're so anti, you know, having Joe Biden interact with these people, because if I were Joe Biden, I would also want to debate these people.
Oh,
I mean, Marianne Williamson, I think is sort of like better than the rap that she has, but she already has a rap of also, you know, being unhinged. I you know,
she's
I
more dangerous in a town hall
but...
because she's like a performer. Like
right.
this is her whole shtick is essentially doing
yeah.
town halls with her, with fake
yeah.
religious undertones. I
yeah.
RFK Jr. like get him in front of every camera.
Yeah.
Make it
yeah.
clear.
If you're Joe Biden, you're calling your friends at CNN and being like, "Look, had a request."
Yeah.
For a town
like,
hall, I have a suggestion for your next town hall.
Right. Like, don't even do one yourself. Just
no.
do just have him do one.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, yeah. I think that there's always sort of like a, you know, the major networks want to cleave to the corporate bottom line, which is just
totally.
About, you know, sort of like supporting the people that already have power in their power gathering. But I also feel like one thing that I think CNN sometimes and CNN less so than MSNBC, I'm thinking of specifically, misses out on is good television when they decide to cleave to the party line in this way. They are television networks. They are one step above pure entertainment. They're like one step above. Like Fox News is just doing entertainment. There's no news there. So like, don't worry about what their choices are. They're not making news choices, so you don't have to think about it. Brent was giving us updates from Fox News today, and they were hilarious and confusing. And I don't even know where they came up with some of the stories that they were leading with in the hour that Trump was being arraigned.
Right. While he was being arraigned, they were talking about some story about some woman who was like tricked by criminals who were using artificial intelligence or something like that.
Yeah, they did like a human interest story about someone who'd gotten like prank called by AI.
Like at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Right. That's what Fox News is doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, don't worry about them. But I feel like CNN in particular could really be the winning network if they thought to themselves, what would be both newsworthy and entertaining? And like RFK Jr. is it, my friends.
That's it.
And honestly, Marianne makes good TV.
Hello.
I obviously have lots of thoughts about her that extend beyond that, but she's good at television. She's beautiful. She says all sorts of crazy shit that sounds very reasonable because she's saying it in a pastor voice. And then later you're like, but I mean, it's good. It would be an hour of entertaining television for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It was also a big week for evil people dying.
Yes.
And I know what you're thinking. Henry Kissinger is still alive, so don't worry about that.
I know. But we
just living his life.
But we're done with Pat Robertson, Ted Kaczynski, and also I forgot to put Berlusconi on here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a banner week for
They come in threes, so we got three. Yes. We just didn't get Henry Kissinger.
Yeah. Well, next time, you know.
Maybe. Or not.
Or not. It's never next time. Don't even think about it.
It never seems to be.
It's literally never next time with Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
He's going to live forever.
Yeah.
But let's get down to the real news. Donald Trump was arraigned today for federal charges. That
What was it? 34 of them? 37?
Yes, I think 38.
Sure.
Not only are these federal charges, which is more exciting than any sort of state charges anyway, because obviously when he posted about this on Truth Social, sounded like he was shocked that he was being indicted, and it as if this has never happened before. And it happened like 2 months ago. I was like, you can't be that shocked that you're being indicted. Not only has everyone been prepared for this for weeks, but also you've already been indicted this year. This happens to you all the time. You're like one of the most indicted people of 2023. So like, forget with the fake shock, like get out of here. But this is an exciting case, A, because the indictment is highly entertaining as a read.
Sure.
Sounds like writers wrote it for Hollywood.
The visuals are great.
It has great pictures in it. And it's also despite being like a highly disturbing crime, it's a highly entertaining crime. It's like Mr. Magoo goes to Washington nonsense going on here.
Yeah, for sure.
Every detail of this case is like actual silliness in addition to being incredibly crimey. Like it has all the ingredients.
I know. It explains itself also in the sense that, like, you know, we know that he did it because in the indictment we find out there's a recording that claims that he did it and why it's illegal.
Right.
Which is a classic Trumpian move.
He not only allows himself, and my favorite thing about that whole section is that he begins the recording by saying this is off the record, but to an aide. He was already telling somebody that he was not supposed to be telling about classified documents that they were not supposed to be seeing. And he somehow thinks that if he says it's off the record, that only works with the media.
I was going to say he wasn't talking to Bob Woodward.
He's like, to a random aide, this is off the record. Get out of here. And then proceeds to explain that he's committing these crimes and that he knows they're crimes. Like, the whole thing is so crazy.
I know. It's wild.
So we had worried maybe that there would be some sort of like January 6th outside of the court, but it was just the usual number of idiots with Trump flags just roaming around.
Yeah. More press than there were.
Yes.
Supporters.
And a lot of people though dedicated to the very important mission of following CNN reporters around and screaming fuck CNN repeatedly behind them while they were on air. A lot of people on the case. There was not one CNN telecast that they did not hit. So good work to them. But you guys, this indictment, like, I remember the raid and I was like, this is so entertaining. I can't believe I've had the good fortune of being alive at a time where the FBI had to raid Mar-a-Lago. But now that we've seen some of the images that his own staff took of these boxes of documents, you guys, there were documents everywhere.
The sheer volume was really alarming. I mean,
like, and some of these are documents from agencies I've never even heard of. Like the National Reconnaissance Office, like the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. What are those?
What?
Like, I mean, he's already revealing state secrets because now we have to know the names of these ridiculous agencies. Oh, boy. How is the National Reconnaissance Office different than the CIA or the FBI?
I don't know, just but do I guarantee you I'm not going to look into it and find out.
Oh, I'm going to look straight into it. I'm going to be doing nothing but looking okay. into this for the rest of the week.
Report back on
you know what I find. But also, oh, that audio we were just talking about, I forgot to mention, the audio was taken in Bedminster, which means that there is a chance that New York and New Jersey could get involved in the indictment action as well, because he admitted to the crimes in New Jersey. So obviously he was criming in New Jersey. He's proven it by announcing
well, that's
it.
That's where
on
he is
tape.
Right now. He flew right back there
yeah.
after.
Oh, yeah. He's he went speaking back to right now to America, but we're not listening because we're instead listening to ourselves talk. Because that's like
the type of people that we are.
The type of people that we are. I highly doubt that his speech is going to offer new insight into this, but I think I can report with full certainty that he is not happy that he's been indicted. So,
I would think not. Yeah. Yeah.
In any case, we know for sure that there was definitely national security, classified national security information, nuclear information, state secret level information about both our actions and the actions of allies in those documents. We also know that for all of these, I think it's 38 charges, they each carry up to 20 years in prison per offense. When I first heard about the 20 years in prison, I was like, that feels like it's a small amount for somebody who's stolen state secrets.
Right.
But then I found out that it's per offense and I'm back in. It's like 420 years in prison or right. something crazy. Like,
yeah. Yeah. But it's just so wild to have a case where you literally have a recording of the person being like, look, here is this classified document that I stole. It's illegal for me to be showing it to you right now, but I'm doing it anyway, and I'm telling you about it. And also, I know that if I would have declassified these as president, it would be fine, but I know that I can't now because I'm no longer the president. I mean, like, literally,
he told the whole story.
He explained the case. I mean, it's like really, it was like a real case closed moment for him, except not in the way that he would have wanted. Right. I mean, it was just,
well, I also think it's so perfect because he is able to explain the crime in his own words in a way that the New York indictment, like I remember in the New York indictment, all these pundits roaming around, like basically disappointed that it wasn't more exciting charges because fraud is super boring. And like, you know, you had to understand technicalities to understand the difference between it being a felony and not like a misdemeanor and like all this boring stuff. This is like Donald Trump has schooled us in exactly why he committed a felony, how he committed the felony, and announced that he is certain that he did it. Like, it's like his own words explain why it was a crime. It's so well done. I can't even fault him for it. And to have begun that exchange with wanting to keep it off the record. What? Record? It's too amazing. And as Brent has pointed out to me repeatedly, that the craziest thing about all of this is just that he could have just returned these documents when he was asked and not done any of this.
The whole thing could have been avoided. These charges, okay, so we know that the National Archives asked him for some things back that they knew or assumed that he had. He gave back 15 boxes at the time. These charges are only on the documents that were found after the raid and were not in those 15 boxes because if he just would have given all of the boxes back, it would have been fine. Which is that, and that's exactly what, if you're looking for the differences here between, you know, Biden, Pence, and Clinton, that's it, actually, right there. Yeah. Because, like, when Joe Biden found out that he had documents, you know, in the garage near the Corvette, he was like, oh, come get them, and then also look through all of my other properties and take whatever you please. Right. Yeah. And Mike Pence did the same thing. Hillary's was a little bit different because it was servers and emails and various other things. But, like, you know, this idea that, like, they were just looking for ways to, like, he knew he had these boxes. We've seen the pictures. It's not as if he didn't know a bathroom and a stage, you know, in the ballroom weren't stacked with, what is it, you know, 50 some boxes or whatever it is. If he just would have given them back to the National Archives when they asked for them, this case doesn't exist.
No, it's so hilarious. And I've noticed that Democrats have been really intent on pointing out that there is a distinction between Biden and Pence and Clinton and
right.
Trump. Like, they want to make sure that Pence is on that list so that it doesn't look partisan. So right. They have been going on and on about Mike Pence on CNN. You know, like, I heard Schiff go on and on about why this is not the same thing as Mike Pence, who very responsibly returned all of his documents, which I think right. has just been so hilarious to listen to. It's right, like they finally have a thing, a talking point that is like that, you know, that look or feels nonpartisan because it is nonpartisan, but allows them to say sort of a nice thing about Mike Pence without having to validate anything about Mike Pence. And they seem really pleased with themselves about it.
Yeah.
They finally have a talking point. They've been working so hard to find one. So this is great news.
Yeah. The other thing that I have found most hilarious about this is that there has been a lot of questioning about what his motive is. And that's, by the way, not something that you have to prove in this case.
No.
It does not matter, right? I mean, we're talking about, like, the Espionage Act, essentially. Like, we don't have to care why he did or didn't do it. Like, we just need to know whether he did, and then that's illegal, and that's enough. But, like, people are wondering, right?
Right.
And, like, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of different, like, oh, you know, he maybe he was selling the secrets, or maybe there was some sort of quid pro quo with foreign governments, or maybe there was something damning that, like, he had, you know, the Department of Defense prepare for him to attack somebody, and he didn't want it in the archives, or what, who knows? And all of those things are sort of, like, fun to speculate on. But they're sure. also stupid to speculate on, because the reason that he did it is because he's Donald Trump. It's the same reason that he called the New York Times and pretended to be his own publicist to try and get good stories about him put in the newspaper. He kept them to show people at Mar-a-Lago. It's a fun party trick.
Yeah.
Like, that's all. It's just to bring out when there's a cool party going on at Mar-a-Lago where people are there on vacation, drunk on Trump wine. And he pulls out a box and is like, looky what I've got here, everybody.
Off the record.
Like, that's the motive.
Yeah. It's to seem like the kind of guy who has those kinds of documents.
That's right. It's cool.
I have classified
documents. Isn't that nice?
One of the first things that when this case first came to our attention, like months ago, and we were, you know, listening to people speculate about the motives. And there was a lot of, like, who can, you know, like, no one really knew. And my mom just turned to me and was like, well, he sold them to Russia, and then just walked away. Like, she didn't even.
And that may also be true. I don't mean to discount that theory, but I mean, like, a moment
where she was like, so she said it so confidently and so clearly and was just like, that's so obviously it that I don't need to go on. And then just walked away. And I was like, you know what? Maybe. Yeah, probably. I don't know. Like.
But I think to her point, it's more just about, like, any of the theories could be correct.
Right.
Or all but of them also, may be correct, you know.
I have a suspicion that you are correct in the sense that his plan was always just to be a guy with documents. That maybe there were additional opportunities that presented once he had the documents.
Yeah.
That at no point was he like, a clever strategy would be for me to steal documents to then make money selling them to Russia. To like, there, somebody was like at Mar-a-Lago and was like, you know who might be interested in these documents that you are bragging about right now is Vladimir Putin, your friend. And he was probably like, oh yeah, I should.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as you know, like I feel like he was never like a man with a plan. He was a man with a desire to brag about about having documents. Yeah. And that created its own opportunities.
Right, exactly. Yes. I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, ultimately, we don't need to have a court case because we know in our hearts that he's guilty.
It's another instance.
And I have a long rant about that coming at the end of this podcast.
Yeah.
But what we know in our hearts is, I think, maybe the most important part of this case, because I think you're about to hear a lot of news about how a Trump-friendly judge is the one taking this case. And because of that, all hope is lost and we can't do anything about it. And I am here to tell you that what you know in your hearts is more important than what this Judge Cannon does or does not know in her heart. In any case, let's talk first, though, about some of the more hilarious Republican responses, because you guys, I don't know where the bottom is for Republicans right now, but it's so much deeper than you would expect. I don't even know what to, like, some of the comments that we are hearing from Republicans right now are just too funny.
Yeah.
They're too funny.
Byron Donalds said that it's fine that all those boxes were in the bathroom because there's 33 bathrooms at Mar-a-Lago. So it's not as just like, you know, there's 32 other bathrooms. Like, people don't need to be going into that bathroom.
No,
by the way, that bathroom was ugly.
That's the bathroom with the chandelier and the tension rod shower curtain. There was a real high-low thing going on design-wise in that bathroom, let me just say.
Yeah, for sure. I just thought that was so hilarious. It's just like, it's okay. Like, they can be in a bathroom. There's 32 other bathrooms. Like, people don't have to use that. People use a different bathroom. They don't have to go into the government secrets bathroom.
No.
Use the other one.
Which is about as intelligent as Kevin McCarthy's response, which was garage doors open all the time, bathroom doors lock. Has he ever been into a bathroom? They lock from the inside.
They lock.
You can only lock yourself in with the documents. You can't protect them from other people, but you can lock yourself in with them. Along with arms, Republicans have never encountered doors. It seems like.
Lindsey Graham, I can't describe to you. You should just literally go watch the clip. I think it was on Dana Bash or something. I can't remember.
But it's on Twitter, so you can find it.
Like, it was live footage of his brain breaking.
That's right.
trying to get, he was like literally trying to work through it all on live television.
Well, what happened was he decided to answer a question about whether this is bad with a long story about Hillary Clinton's email servers,
right.
At which point the host was like, is this relevant? And he had like a full conniption fit. He shouts about how he's just trying to get the Republican talking points out if they would just fucking let him talk, which is like not the answer to that question.
No,
my friends. But also, it's just like his face gets red. He starts spittling. Like, the whole thing is so dramatic and theatrical.
Yeah.
And that's where Lindsey Graham's head is at these days.
Oh, boy.
Which is like, Lindsey Graham has been slowly losing his like self-control in these. Like, this is not his first interview where I know his like pearl clutching is sort of infamous, but he's like starting to lose control of his sort of like interview decorum.
Yeah.
He just like over time, it's gotten much worse is all I'm saying. This was like sort of the pinnacle of a long trend of Lindsey Graham not being able to act right in interviews.
Poor Lady G.
Lady G.
isn't that what we call him?
Yes. Chuck Grassley, one of the more hilarious responses, said he had not read the indictment because, quote, he's not a legal expert.
But I'll tell you what he is, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, or was. He's the ranking member now because the Democrats were in control. But he's been on the Judiciary Committee since like the beginning of time because he's
the Republican leader of the Judiciary So he is, in fact, a legal expert. Or if he's not a legal expert, that's even worse.
That's troubling. Right. Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
One Republican who did admit that Donald Trump is totally fucked is Bill Barr. who is working his way back into the dinner party circuit. I have always said that Bill Barr, he's a swamp creature. And because of that, he could only sink so low if he wanted to keep the dinner circuit invitations flowing. And so Bill Barr has sort of like hit his bottom and is now one of the only Republicans going around to media being like, this case is going to be impossible to get dismissed. It's going to be impossible to defend. And Trump is fucked, which I appreciate about him.
Agreed.
Also, I mean, you know, and considering that Trump's own lawyers seem to feel the same because they keep quitting, I feel like he would know.
Yeah.
But I mean, this points to a bigger problem, which is like, what is his defense here? Because he's explained and admitted to the crime on tape.
Well, and the crime, I think, is specifically, you know, a lot of Republicans initially came out and did the whole song and dance about, like, we can't be indicting former presidents and, you know, the Justice Department has been politicized and weaponized and blah, 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 blah. And some of those same people by later in the week, you know, Nikki Haley included, we're going to get to her in just a second, but I mean, literally had changed their tune, and to a degree anyway. And the reason is because, like, what the actual charges are. I mean, I think the idea that, like, he had, like, national security secrets that were, like, would have put, like, you know, potentially our troops in danger and our, you know, people in, you know, in the CIA in danger and people who are on the ground in places and even some of our allies in danger, like, you know, I would contend that a lot of that nonsense that the Republican Party spews about being the party who cares about those things is nonsense. But, like, regardless, they are the party who likes to go around and claim that they are the party that represents those things. And so I think it makes it hard considering the content and that we know that he did it because he told us that he did to really, I think, defend the actual charges in a way that really makes sense for them. So I think that we're probably going to see some more people come out against this. I also feel like I saw some poll recently, and I can't remember exactly the numbers, but, you know, it was something like 20% of people felt like, you know, the previous charges out of New York were, like, you know, severe charges, and like something like 40 or 50% of people thought that, like, these were severe charges. So I feel like you're just going to see movement, I think, within the party and certainly amongst some of the people running for president, although maybe not as much as I would have thought by now, which I think we're sort of going to get into next.
That's the mystery of our time. But I will note also, just speaking to those polling numbers, the number of people who are going to say that the charges are serious is always going to increase in proportion to how funny the charges are. So just in the back of your mind, file that away for my later rant. But like the amount of funniness of the charges is actually, I would say, almost even a national security issue. And so the reason that these charges are going to be more serious for Trump is because they are a fun read and hilarious to talk about, even though they are also incredibly damning.
Yeah, so, exactly.
In any case, let's talk about how the presidential candidates are handling this, because it's embarrassing, frankly.
Yeah, right. It really is. I mean, I mentioned Nikki Haley, who, you know, sort of initially, I think, like, you know, on Monday was like, Justice Department is bad. And then more recently has said it's incredibly reckless, if true. So, you know, and it's ridiculous to think that she might wonder whether it is or isn't true.
Right. But, considering he's announced that it is, it seems like a known fact.
But she has changed her tone a little bit. Let's skip over Chris Christie. Let's do him last because I have a lot to say about him.
Yeah. Mike Pence did a similar thing where he, at first, he was saying that it was going to fuel division and sending a terrible message to the wider world. And then he started leaning on the, like, let's let the process play out. But he's deeply troubled. Today, right before we started recording, he came out with a slightly harsher statement, which I do not have right in front of me, but I think was largely rooted in having military in his family and feeling like these actions made them less safe. So,
Sure. It was personal to him.
It was personal to him. Right. Much like having healthcare. Yeah. Mike Pence started to tiptoe into the world of damning the president. But
yeah. Let's talk about Chris Christie. And before we move off of those two, you know, I think what, because this will relate to Chris Christie, what I think the mistake that they're making is trying to have it both ways.
Yeah,
and I think they're trying to thread some sort of weird political needle. But what I think Chris Christie gets correct here, surprisingly, is that, you know, you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, but, you know, there's always two lanes in a primary, right? Like, sometimes in the Republican primary, it's, you know, there's the evangelical lane and there's the small government lane. Or in a Democratic primary, it's the, you know, it's the further left-leaning lane and then there's the moderate lane. Or, you know, sometimes other lanes emerge as the primary goes on. This Republican primary is much simpler than that. In the sense that the two lanes are the Donald Trump lane, which consists of all of the people in the primary named Donald Trump. Then there is the not Donald Trump lane, which consists of the people who are not named Donald Trump. Donald Trump is presumably going to win the Donald Trump lane. So the other 74 people who are running in the primary are running in the not Donald Trump lane. And the way that you are going to win that lane is by being the person who is the most not Donald Trump. And this idea that if you're Nikki Haley, like, maybe if I say one nice thing about Donald Trump, but then also say like one kind of mean thing about Donald Trump, like that she's going to like get some people to vote for her from the not Donald Trump lane and then steal some of like the Donald Trump supporters who like tried to burn down the fucking Capitol, is truly insane and actually stupid. I mean, it's dumb. So like, I think Chris Christie, as of right now in June, is the person most getting it. And I think the person who probably, as far as I can tell, will probably be there at the end. I'm not saying that he'll win, certainly, because I think the not Trump lane has less voters in it, I think, unfortunately, probably. But like you worry about that later. That's a future Chris Christie problem.
Yeah.
The problem right now is to try and run in a primary against Donald Trump. And like the idea that you could have it both ways with Donald Trump supporters is dumb.
Well, none of these people are running a campaign. They're like in a religion. Like, well, Chris Christie is running a campaign because Chris Christie, you know, he's already split from the Trump religion. Like, he's not only split, but he is persona non grata in that religion. So he can't get into that lane even if he wants to. Yeah. The rest of these people, the reason that they're so afraid is, and I think that, you know, their deep connection to their own faiths is probably partly to blame here, is like part of the reason they can't see a way out of this conundrum is because they exited the political side of Republican politics a long time ago and joined a religion that has a demigod in its as
yeah
its
they're
leader.
In the Trump cult, right? Yeah,
they're in a cult you know, that's run by Donald Trump, and so they don't even see an option where they could be like, I'm running against Donald Trump. Chris Christie sees it in part because he is cut from the same cloth as Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So I think on some level, like, he knows that Donald Trump is just a fucking gangster. And so is Chris Christie. Chris Christie is a man who shut down, you know, traffic in a major, you know, bridge thoroughfare in the tri-state area just over personal petty vendetta. Like, Chris Christie doesn't fucking care about this cult. But he's currently the only, it's so funny because he is really the only one working hard to contrast himself with Donald Trump. And he is in so many ways the most similar person in the race to Donald Trump. But I think that's why he knows what he is, right?
You know,
he
knows I'm just like,
that he is in a race and not a religion.
Right. If I'm, you know, let's just take Tim Scott as an example. I'm thinking to myself, how do I set myself apart from Donald Trump? I think to myself, well, I haven't been twice impeached. I have not been twice indicted, both at the state and federal level. I don't have 70 some odd felony charges against me right now. I didn't attempt to overthrow the government. I haven't personally lost to Joe Biden in a national election. I just don't know why none of them are saying those things. It doesn't make any sense.
Is the most infuriating. It's a, you know, listen, it's a conundrum Democrats have faced before, because we have watched Hillary Clinton lose national elections and then been like, should we run Hillary Clinton? Could this be her moment? But like, Donald Trump is the only person in the race so far who has already lost to Joe Biden in a head-to-head matchup. Right. He is the only confirmed loser in the field.
Right.
Like, how is nobody running with that?
Right.
Well, Chris Christie
is
running with that.
I was going to say, Chris Christie, that's what, you know, he had his CNN town hall and he said, you know, Trump hasn't won a damn thing since 2016. He's when asked about this indictment. And I think he's also sort of like gets why Trump had these documents also, like, because he said
cut from the same cloth. He's the same people. These are his people.
Right. He said it was vanity run amok and ego run amok. Like, yeah. I mean, like, he really, I think, fully understands, maybe in a way that shouldn't have surprised me, because I think you're right. Like, he's the one who most gets him. But like,
he knows him the best, and he is from that community of blowhards.
Right. Exactly. But he's really getting it in a way that, you know, I can commend. I don't like him, obviously. I wouldn't vote for him.
No, he's horrible.
I mean, just in terms of like what everyone is like up to politically here in this race, like, he's where it's at.
Well, he's the reason I say he's the Mike Huckabee of this edition of the podcast, is because I feel like there are times that you have to acknowledge someone having the right strategy in either the right or wrong moment, because there's right strategy in the Republican primary, just as there's a right strategy in the general and also in the Democratic primary. And as there's no one in the Republican primary I would vote for, obviously,
right,
fucking assholes. However, there are people who have righter strategies than other people.
Right.
And currently, I feel like Chris Christie's at least trying something.
Yeah,
I think that's the main sort of distinction here, is not even whether or not his strategy will be successful, because who can fucking know what's going on with Republican voters right now? You know, I think that the support for Trump, I'm going to go on about this also later, is slightly overblown, in the sense that I think pundits are like so obsessed with how popular he is that they have like lost a little bit of the thread, where he doesn't have a majority of Republican voters under his, he has a majority of the electorate, in the sense that it's split a million ways and he has the largest share right now, but he's only in a position to lose voters. He's not in a position to win voters. And I don't think that his, you know, considering all of the losses of the elections since his 2016 victory, I don't think that he's in actually that strong of an electoral position. That being said, however, if you want to run against the person that, and also, I mean, I've said this many times before, but no one who's a front runner this early in a race is a real front runner. That was bullshit when we said about Ron DeSantis, and it's bullshit now. However, if you are trying to run against the presumed front runner in a race, you have to try something. Just one of the things. You have to try an idea. That's
right.
Like, otherwise, why be anywhere?
Yeah. Why be anywhere?
If Donald Trump is your demigod, go home.
Yeah.
Why are you running against your demigod? Like, it just doesn't make sense. But this is also not the end of the road for these indictment stories. And that's another important thing to remember when it comes to specifically how these candidates are going to be able to build their case over time, because they are going to be faced with this conundrum again and again and again, and the charges are going to get more serious more ridiculous.
At least twice more times.
Yeah. Over things that are cut and dry, not patriotic actions. Like seditious actions. Like, they're going to have to figure out whether they want to be apologists for sedition. So I don't envy their position, but also it would be good to have come out now and been like, this guy's a fucking asshole, because you're going to have to come out at some point, and you're going to look like a hypocrite when you have to do it later.
Yep.
But there was movement as on the January 6th grand jury today as well.
Today. Yeah.
Today of all days, the day of his arraignment for his first federal crimes. that jury is meeting in a federal courthouse in Washington today, and the Nevada GOP chair, Michael McDonald, and the vice chair, Jim DeGaffenried, were seen entering the room where that grand jury is meeting.
Right.
So those are two of the fake electors.
Right.
And so we don't know what the charges are going to be in that case, but this is, I think, where my rant begins, because these are also potentially not the only federal charges that he's going to face.
And this is another Jack Smith case also, who appears to be giving no fucks at all here.
Nor should he.
Right, exactly.
Wild crimes. But so I feel like every time that there's been indictment, now that we've been through multiple rounds of Trump indictments, every time that there's an indictment, there's like a lot of people who will roam around being like, oh, but this one's not going to stick because of blah, blah, blah. You know, in the first case, it was just because the charges were boring and pundits were frustrated that after, you know, spending 24 hours straight speculating wildly about them, they just got a bunch of boring fraud charges, which are, by the way, felonies. So who fucking cares if they're boring? But it's hard to explain on national television why that's an exciting charge. So I get it. It made their job harder. And I, at the time, was like, it does not matter if these charges are real. It does not matter if these charges are provable. It matters that somebody filed charges. The only thing that mattered about the New York charges is that they existed and someone had the guts to do it. So yeah. When we think about Bragg's strategy, like part of his strategy is, you know, to have a boring case that he can actually prove, obviously. But part of the strategy for us, the American people, is just to have someone who was in a position where they could actually take the risk of filing charges against Donald Trump. And that someone, it makes sense that someone would be a New York City, you know, DA, because that's a place where Donald Trump really can't touch him. You know, that yeah. Donald Trump is persona non grata here. He is not welcome in this city or state. So right. It's like, go ahead, file all the charges you want against him. Everyone, we've been out to get him for years. So like that just set the tone. It didn't matter what those charges were. I don't fucking care if that case ever happens. It mattered that somebody broke the seal. So then we have these charges, which are federal charges. They're much more exciting. They're much more serious. And they also are much more entertaining. And I've been hearing a lot of people kind of bemoan that the judge is not ideal in this case, because the judge yeah. is a very, you know, is the judge is somebody who has shown herself to be sort of favorable to Donald Trump. And that may also be the case. And he may also get off on these charges. And I don't even do not worry your mind with whether or not he's going to be convicted or go to jail or whatever over these charges. Keep your eyes on the prize, because that is not the prize. I don't really care what happens to him personally. I care that he is not the president of the United States or in a position to be in any kind of political leadership. That's what our goal is here. So first off, don't worry about whether he's like going to jail. It'd be nice if he was miserable, but like, I don't fucking care what his life is. But the sort of larger arc here is about the fact that the walls are closing in, that there are multiple indictments in wait right now, that those indictments are for even more serious charges, and that it is building at a slow and steady pace in a way that is very cinematic and exciting. And when you think about, I mean, I feel like I argue this a lot when it comes to how candidates in, you know, while they're campaigning, should think about their role as not really as being a theatrical role, as not really being a role about policy or anything meaningful. It's a messaging role and not much else. I think like, the sort of goal here is not really like the carriage of justice in the specific sense. It's possible that he's being treated better than like any criminal has ever been treated in the history of criming. He is probably going to get way more leeway. These cases are going to take way longer than they should. Everything is going to seem like it's not working out. But when you think about what it takes to make people want to slowly back away from this guy, politically speaking,
right.
What it takes is this slow, exciting build of momentum where each case is slightly more damning and slightly more obvious and slightly more clear. And over time, it's just like, you can't remember a time in your life that Donald Trump was not being indicted once a month. And right. like that, so that his name becomes synonymous with indictments and not with successful presidency or whatever Republicans want to say about him. So keep your eye on the larger story arc here. Do not worry about the judge in this case. Do not worry about whether the charges in New York are exciting or can be understood by anybody. Like, I keep hearing people dismiss whether each individual indictment is going to work. And it's like, don't worry about it. Worry about the story. Like, all that matters here is the way the story gets told. And that is what you should keep your eye on.
Yeah. And it seems like that's going well.
Yes. Right now. No, I would say this case delivered everything it needed to build that tension. Because so we start with this New York indictment where it's a very cinematic scene. We watch that slow OJ style drive to the, you know, to get to the arraignment. And then we watch him get stuck in traffic on the way out. There's like moments of comedy. There's moments of levity. There's the fact that he had to be admonished by the judge to not tweet threatening shit about Bragg's daughter. Like, there's all sorts of kind of like plot points that make, you know, that make that a good first act to this story. This indictment is incredibly entertaining. It's super funny. It has great visuals. And also it has the benefit of him definitely being guilty, and not only being guilty, but explaining what the crime he's guilty of is to everyone in his own words. So like, even though this, and this is like a comedic one, even though it's a very serious charge, it's a charge that anyone can understand is like, incredibly dangerous to America, but also like, it's just funny enough to be a good news story. And so it's like it serves like a dual purpose of being serious but also being entertaining. And like, sorry that we live in a society where, you know, television news controls all and we have to have stuff that can like make it through the Twitter algorithm in order to like be interesting, but like we do. And in the same way that you can't think that having like smart, detailed policy points when you're running for president is more important than having good talking points, you can't think that the details of these cases are more important than the collective whole of these indictments. And the fact that we have the exciting dramatic tension of waiting on at least two other indictments, if not more.
Right. And one of them being when he planned a coup of the government.
Right. And the other being when he tried to overthrow a democratic election. Like the tension is only building. We are only halfway through the story here. And already it's such a good story. Like what matters is that he does not become the president again.
Right.
And what matters is that the Republican Party move away from him.
Right. I was going to say, and the best part of the story isn't actually, you think it's when he goes to jail, but it's when everyone ditches him and he's left alone to his own devices. That's the win.
That's the moment, you guys. I don't even care if when he experiences that he is in jail. I could not give two shits about what happens to him personally. Like if he spends the rest of his life golfing and enjoying, I don't care. I want him to be doing that alone.
That's all I care about.
But his
comeuppance isn't necessarily jail.
No, exactly. Yeah. Also, think about how thrilled he would be if he went to jail and then we spent the next 4 years reporting on him from jail. Like his comeuppance would be no one caring.
Right. I was going to say everyone just being like, we're not doing that anymore. Goodbye, sir.
Exactly.
See you never.
Being forgotten would be his comeuppance. So just keep that in mind as well. But I feel like sometimes when stories like this are breaking and it's so exciting to follow them live and it's so exciting to hear what a bunch of dumb pundits have to say and you end up, you know, rediscovering why you think that Van Jones has turned into a complete idiot and like, you know, all of the usual, like every time that he gets on TV, I'm like, why are you here? He makes a point. He says a lot of words and he doesn't say anything. And you're like, why are you talking? And I used to love Van Jones. Like, I don't know what has happened to him in any case. But every time that happens, it can be easy to fall prey to the idea that like this particular moment's not working out right, or this particular moment has challenges. And like, keep your eye on the larger story arc here. Think about this like a great political thriller that you are watching. And how do we make sure the thriller has a satisfying ending? Like that's our job here. And so don't worry about the details. Or if the justice system works, it doesn't work. Don't worry about that.
Right.
We've been knowing that. And our job here is to make it politically untenable for people to continue to put him in this demigod position.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all that we care about. So keep our eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. And also, this is a great time to watch a lot of terrible TV news because it's very entertaining right now. So
I watched all of them today.
I mean, you had to.
I'm still mad at CNN.
Sure.
And I'm always mad at MSNBC, and Fox News is Fox News. But I was like, well, I'll just see what everybody's up to today.
Yeah. No, I flipped a little between MSNBC and CNN and discovered that I still am madder at MSNBC than CNN. So that was good to relearn to myself. But then I got mad at Van Jones. So it's like hard to know what's going on anymore.
Yeah. I had a Van Jones free day today.
Oh, that's interesting. You know who else I've been seeing a lot of is George Conway. He's on CNN constantly.
I did see a little
now.
George Conway. Has he lost weight or done something weird to his hair? But I feel like he's lost weight too.
Yeah, I think he lost weight and he also grew out his hair. I would say good on him, except for that he does need a haircut.
Yeah, he looks weird.
He looks like an aging rocker right now. And as one of the squarest people on earth, I just can't tolerate that look on him. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the news. What a day we've had.
Great day.
And hopefully he didn't ruin it by giving a speech that we missed an important part of by recording this podcast. But
hasn't he been going around giving like very lackluster speeches? Like even after his like last
indictment,
he's depressed. It's just like, I was going to say, like, this is not like, I'm sure he's very upset about that indictment today, but it's like, what does he do? Go get on a stage and like rail against like something that he told us that he did, I guess.
Here's the New York Times headline about it.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Donald Trump defended his conduct with a string of familiar falsehoods. We fact-checked some of his claims. So
doesn't sound like it was anything new.
No. And then the CNN headline is, Trump has responded to his federal indictment with a blizzard of dishonesty. Here are 10 of his claims fact-checked. So,
oh, wow. 10.
In any case, there it is.
There it is.
He's a man who's, it's 37 charges. It's a 37 charge.
37.
Federal.
There were 38 because I think 38, there was one against, what's the
there's
other
one
guy?
Against his aide. Yeah.
Yeah. His aide.
But yeah, that's the story, you guys. And I, before we leave, highly recommend that you look at the arraignment itself. It's actually very readable. I mean, the indictment itself.
Indictment.
It's very readable. It has funny images in it. And the Times did an annotated version where sometimes you discover that it's even funnier than you first realized. So.
Oh, fun. I haven't done that. So maybe I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a podcast, I think, from like one of the SCOTUS blogs or something where they read it. So you can also listen to it if you want. It's only an hour.
Right. Great.
So that's the news. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.